Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks for joining me today. We have some great conversations ahead of us as we continue our conversations with missionary kids this week. First up, we're going to talk with a child from, well, he's a teen now, from a Lutheran Bible translator's family. We're going to talk with Chris Radowski about his life growing up as a missionary kid. In the second half, a special treat, we get to talk with the Reverend Edward Frederick Lutz, who is... Well, he's a pastor, a missionary, but grew up as the child of missionaries. Some of our first missionaries serving the Lord in India. I hope you can join us for that conversation in the second half of Faith and Family as well today. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo. Our first guest today, Christopher Radowski. He is a missionary kid with the Radowski family, and they are with Lutheran Bible Translators. Christopher, Chris, welcome to Faith and Family. Glad to have you as our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have a chance to talk with you, and so glad that you're willing to share your story. Now, I have to share with our listeners that your story, the missionary kid perspective, is shared in the Lutheran Bible Translators blog on lbt.org. You just go to the blog there and look for the MK perspective, the missionary kid perspective, and Chris is one of several stories shared there, and I'm looking forward to talking about your family today. Chris, tell us about your family today. We'll go back in time here in just a little bit, but tell us about your family.
Well, my dad was a pastor before we went to Texas, mm-hmm. and trained for Bible translation and stuff. And my mom was pretty much a stay-at-home mom for the whole time. And I've got two brothers and two sisters.
Where do you fit in there? Are you in the middle somewhere?
I'm the oldest.
The oldest of five. All right.
Yes.
And so the two brothers, two sisters, and
yeah.
Where were you born? Were you born here in the United States?
Yes, I was born in I think Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Ypsilanti, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, born in Michigan, and how old were you when Dad was thinking about becoming a missionary and started his education to become a missionary?
Honestly, well, that's kind of hard to tell because they had been thinking about it for a long
sure.
time. But they actively started education toward that when I was about 12 or
I see.
11.
And so was Dad a pastor before that, before becoming a missionary?
Yeah.
All right. So was he in seminary when you were a kid?
Yeah, I was about 7 when he started there.
All right. And so he studied at the seminary and also then later on, studied to become a missionary, and that's when that's what took you to Texas then for the Graduate Institute of Applied Linguistics, right?
Yep.
So you moved around a bit. Michigan, seminary, were you at seminary in St. Louis or seminary in Indiana?
Seminary in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. So you moved around a bit, Michigan, St. Louis, Missouri, Texas, anywhere else in there?
His congregation over Vicarage was in Ohio, and so we went there and then moved back for the fourth year and then moved back to Ohio for a couple of years before we went to Texas.
So you moved around a bit. Dad goes to school, the Graduate Institute of Applied Linguistics in Texas, and then where did you go from there?
Well, from there, we moved back to St. Louis into the missionary housing, mm-hmm. In Building 1. And let me think. We traveled around a lot raising funds, mm-hmm. For our work to as far west as South Dakota and as far east as Virginia. and all the way from Texas to the far north of Michigan.
And at that time, did you know where you might be going to serve as a missionary, where your family would be going?
Toward the beginning, I didn't. I was really, really hoping we would go to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was here, not Namibia, Nigeria.
Why did you want to go to Nigeria?
It was a jungle country. Jungle seemed exciting.
you're a boy, you're a kid. You wanted to go to somewhere there's a jungle.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the option of the desert in Botswana. So I was like, of the two.
And where did you end up?
We ended up in Botswana.
How old were you when you moved to Botswana?
I had just turned 13.
Ah, so a teenager, and you moved to the desert.
Yep.
What were your thoughts at the time when you found out you were moving to Botswana?
I wasn't really happy about it, but what other choice did I have?
Sure, yeah. No choice. You weren't really happy about it. But so tell us about the move to Botswana. How did you get ready for the move? Was there anything that you had to do? I know Dad had been training and had gone through the linguistics training and also had spent time gathering support. What about you? How did you prepare personally for life in Botswana? Did you have to do anything?
I may have had to do some stuff, but it was purely superficial, like gathering documentation.
Mm-hmm.
As for mental preparation, I didn't know even how to prepare for that, so I just didn't.
Sure. Well, tell me about how long was it a long flight to get to Botswana?
Oh my gosh, yes. like 18 hours.
Oh, that's a long time. And did the whole family go all together on that flight?
Yes, thankfully. That would have been hard to do split up.
Yeah, so all seven of you on one flight. Headed to Botswana. I gather you probably had some layovers at various places, 18 hours or more to get there. No, that's okay. Go ahead.
We had a, I think, 9 or 12-hour layover in Heathrow in
mm-hmm.
England.
Mm-hmm. And yep. So from England, where did you go? Where did you fly into in Africa from England?
We flew directly to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Where then we ran from one terminal to the other to get our next flight.
And when did you finally? So probably many hours later, you made it to Botswana. Did you fly into Botswana, or did you have to travel by car?
We flew to Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we picked up in Gaborone, in the capital.
Tell me about what do you recall about your first day, your first night, your first week there?
The first 2 days were a bit of a blur, but the third day I woke up and literally forgot where I was. And then I was trying to rationalize where I was. I came to the conclusion that I was on another planet. It's like, wait a second. No.
What did you... Now, prior to moving to Botswana, 13, so you were in middle school at that point in time. Were you going to a school in here in the States? Were you homeschooling? What was school like for you before you moved to Botswana?
I had been in school maybe twice... Three times, sorry. In school three times for, I think, kindergarten or... Is kindergarten directly before first grade?
Usually, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. Kindergarten and then second grade and then fourth grade. But between that, I was homeschooled.
So quite a bit with the moving around between schools and homeschool. Now in Botswana... What's the outlook? Will you be homeschooled there, or what was the plan once you got to Botswana?
We just decided, my parents just decided to homeschool us right off the bat. And so we did that for a year, and then the time came to choose a high school. So of the choices, I didn't want to go to the Catholic one. So we I got a distance curriculum from, what is it, the American School of Correspondence.
Mm-hmm. So you did some correspondence school for high school then?
Yep.
Tell me about meeting people where you lived. Now, were you living in the desert?
Yeah, we were in a rural village.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of... not quite at the center, but very kind of close to the center of the Kalahari District, which is in the lower, I believe it's the southwest part of the Kalahari Desert, but I'm not quite sure.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of a, it wasn't overly primitive, but it was, it had stuff like water and electricity and phones could be gotten, but it was kind of bare.
That was my next question. How was your home in Botswana like or different from your home in the United States? How was your house or your home similar or different?
Okay. Well, it didn't have air conditioning or heat.
Mm-hmm.
So in the summer, we basically tried to find a pool. And in the winter, we found out that our house had a fireplace, and we used it.
You found out that you're... How did you not know you had a fireplace?
Well, we knew... Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Found out that the fireplace worked.
I see.
But, yeah.
So...
We put the TV in it because it was one of those plasma TVs where you can't quite see it if the sun's shining on it or if it's at a weird angle.
So you... You get adjusted to life in Botswana, making adjustments to the things that were different. Were there things that were like your life, your home back in the United States?
Honestly, I can't think of very many things that were similar, except for just kind of the culture, because for the first 2 years or so, we kind of lived in a bubble. And to go back to answer the other question you asked as for meeting people, we met the neighbors and stuff, but there were some issues with just not getting some cultural things, and we had to kind of distance ourselves a little bit.
So it took a while to learn the culture. Tell me about the culture you were living in there in Botswana.
Well,
what was different for you in terms of the culture there?
Different. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the asker has power.
Ah.
If someone like says, "I like your purse, give it to me," then the asker has power there. Not always, but that's just kind of the norm.
Hmm.
And different things like the way you say hello to someone. Like, they don't have different words, they just have one. But I mean, if you're walking past an older person, I believe you're supposed to greet them first, but only if they're sitting. If they're standing, then you wait for them to greet you, I think is how it goes. I don't know, it's confusing. No, sorry, the older people greet first. Yeah, older people greet first.
So learning the customs and the things of the aspects of the culture were challenging. Many missionaries talk about experiencing experiencing culture shock after they'd been there for a while. It sounds like that might have been the case.
Oh, yes. It was bad. It was so bad.
Well, how did you learn to embrace the culture? How did you learn to get to meet people? How did that happen over time? Were you able to make some friends?
Yes and no. A complicating factor is that I have a bit of Asperger's, and so I didn't really learn how to greet people anyway. Just kind of kept my own little things.
Mm-hmm.
But I did make some friends, some Afrikaner friends, after the first 2 years.
And tell us about your friends.
Well, they were white Africans. They were descended from the Dutch, but they're farmers. So they owned a fairly large cattle farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go out there from time to time and spend maybe a week or two with them, driving the cows from one end to the other or tending to the goats or whatever they needed us to do. But that was what I did for fun.
It sounds fun to me.
Yeah, it was.
So what did you gain any... aside from friends, did you gain skills that you found helpful to you that you've brought back with you to the United States? Anything that you learned or knowledge or skills that you gained while you were there?
Yes, but not in the way you would think.
Okay.
I've noticed that, well, how do I word this? I've noticed that a lot of the time people here are very, very rigid to how things work and how culture is. It's like normal is normal and like anything outside of it is crazy. And it just kind of, at some point something clicked and I was just like, okay, I can separate these two things. I can see that, okay, this is strange, but at the same time, this is how this person is. And that's okay.
So you were able to distinguish, you gained the skill to distinguish between cultures and be able to use that when you moved back to the United States.
Yeah. It just helps to get to know people a bit more, you know?
Sure. Sure. So how long were you in Botswana? Was it about?
I think I was there about 5 years. Mm-hmm. Before I had to leave.
While you were in the 5 years that you were there, did you learn any new languages?
Bits and pieces. I could have learned languages if I had stuck with it, but I stuck with it, and studied and kind of spent more time with my friends, but I just never really got around to it.
Mm-hmm. And so you were there 5 years, returned to the U.S. Tell us about that move back to the United States. The same, 18-hour flight or so?
It wasn't the same. Instead of laying over in Heathrow, I laid over in Senegal at Dakar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I flew into Virginia where my uncle picked me up.
Okay, so did you fly back by yourself at this point?
Yeah.
Okay, and flew back and stayed. Your uncle picked you up, and did the rest of your family come back around that time as well?
No, the rest of my family wouldn't come back for another 6-7 months yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of work schedules and whatnot.
I see. So what was the first thing you did once you got back in the United States?
Well, after arriving at my aunt and uncle's house, my uncle had to go to work and my aunt was working at home, so I asked her to make me a cup of coffee because I was exhausted. I drank it and immediately fell asleep.
Uh-oh.
That was the first thing that happened.
Had coffee and you fell asleep. Were there things about the United States that perhaps you missed that you were looking forward to?
You know, kind of, but I think that it's funny about when you move is that you romanticize a place, mm-hmm, and suspend its memory so that it seems like this immortal, lovely place, and then you go there and it's aged and it's changed and it's just so different from what you remember. So yes, there were things that I was looking forward to. A lot of those things weren't there anymore.
Mm.
So
Well, that's quite observant. That's a very insightful. That when we're away from something that we have fond memories of, we romanticize it. We have this image stuck in our mind, but we forget that time carries on, and things age over that time. They don't just remain exactly as they were when we left. That happens with places and things as well as people. Sometimes when we're away from people, we forget that they're changing as well while we're away. So you've been back in the United States for a little while, and tell us about, well, before we talk more about being back in the States, tell us a little bit about your dad's work as a missionary in Botswana.
Well, first thing we did once we moved to Kang was to travel around and talk to all the chiefs in the Kalahari district, because we wanted to let them know this is what we were doing, and get their blessing for us to do the work. And that went rather well. And then sometime later, my dad organized a committee of people to help manage, or not manage, to, what is it? To help oversee the process of translation.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm understanding correctly, then my dad put together a team, which he then led to, under the guidance of this committee, to translate the Bible. I think they started with Luke.
Wow, so they worked on translating the Bible into the local language, a tribal language, I gather.
Yes, Sikalahari, which means the language of the Kalahari.
Very good. So during his time there, he helped lead that project, and then came the time to move back to the United States, and now he's serving with Lutheran Bible Translators as the director of the International Program Ministries, correct?
Yep.
So that brings you back to the United States and Northern Illinois, and then after you get back to Northern Illinois, the offices are moving to Concordia, Missouri. So you had to get another move, correct?
Yep.
What did you think when you found out you were moving to Concordia, Missouri?
I spent several days singing hymns and praise. I could not have been more happy, because, to be completely honest, Chicago is terrible. It's just living there is stressful.
Well, there might be some that disagree with you, but it was a stressful place for you, is what you're saying.
Oh, true. Yeah.
I understand. I was a student in Chicago. I loved studying there. It's a great place, and I have a lot of great friends there. But being a boy who grew up in the country, it wasn't quite a great match for me to live there long term. But I really loved studying there. It was a great city for studying. So now you're in Concordia, Missouri, nice, quiet little town right off the interstate in Missouri. And how's that move? How has that move gone?
Oh, it's been so nice. We literally packed up a house in 2 days, pretty much. Mm-hmm. We moved down here and actually got to start moving our stuff into our house a day early. And we just finished the closing on it 2 days ago, so it's actually our house now.
So getting all settled in and in a new place, and will you be attending school this year?
No, I have finished my school. I'm going to be trying to find some work and saving up for stuff like a car that I need to get before I go to college.
Uh-huh. Very good. So looking for work at this point in time, looking to save up money for college and the things that would help you with that. Well, very good. Well, thinking back to your family's work as missionaries, how has the work of your parents influenced you as you think about your future vocations, and even how has that influenced or shaped your faith?
Faith is definitely the easier question to answer. When we were, let me think, it was about a month before we had to go over, or we should have been able to go over. And the office called and they said, you don't have enough funds. We may have to have you stay back for another few months. And that was a bit disheartening.
Mm-hmm.
But then my dad sent out a tweet or something to our supporters and said, hey, if everyone can contribute like $10, we can have enough to leave as we're scheduled. And that the expense that was keeping us here, the expense that was keeping us here was the cost of our vehicle in Botswana, which is a really, really nice white van. But it was raised in less than 2 days.
Well, that's amazing. Thanks be to God for that. Well, what about you? What are you thinking about in terms of future vocations? I know you mentioned you were thinking about college and preparing for college. Has the work of your parents, the mission work of your parents, influenced some of those decisions?
Yes and no. Know that I'm not going to go and be a missionary. Well, not yet, anyway. If that happens, it'll be much later. But yes, that I understand now certain ways in which, just like small ways that are almost imperceptible, to live out faith daily through my work. Like just being kind and considerate and stuff. A lot of things that a lot of, you know, it should be common sense, but it seems not to be, you know?
Sure. So yeah. What are you thinking about in terms of future vocation?
I'm thinking at this point, interior design.
Uh-huh.
Although that could change, because a few years ago it was airplanes and before that it was music, so who knows?
Do you like architecture?
I do. I love it. It's one of the things that I geek out about almost every single time I go anywhere.
Well, that's outstanding. Well, I'm sure that that your parents are proud of you and very happy that you got a chance to share your story with the missionary kid perspective with Lutheran Bible Translators, and very thankful that we got to share it today. Before we wrap up our conversation today, do you have any words of advice or encouragement to families, especially to kids, whose families are preparing to go serve as missionaries in another country, in another culture? Maybe they were like you in middle school and getting ready to pack up and move to a different side of the planet. Any words of encouragement or advice for them?
It'll get better.
It might be tough at first, but it'll get better.
Yep.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family and for sharing your story about life as a missionary kid. Looking forward to hearing more down the road. And I know that your other siblings as well have shared their story. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk with them in the future. Thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thanks for having me.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Not only are we concerned about abortion at Life Issues, we also work to protect vulnerable people from euthanasia at the end of life. Here's a heartwarming story of how newlyweds are living their respect for life. On their wedding day, Brian and Lauren Kertulik would be excused if they were totally absorbed with the festivities. But Brian's 91-year-old grandmother was already dressed up when she injured her ankle the day of the wedding and was heartsick she couldn't attend. So between the wedding and reception, Brian and Lauren stopped by the hospital to see her. It totally made everyone's day because a month later, his grandmother died. Isn't that what weddings are for? Family and love? Brian and Lauren said it was their best decision of the day.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Hi, I'm Grace Kane, a junior at Lutheran High School South in St. Louis. Every day, I can grow in my faith with Christian faculty and other young believers. Together, we grow in the challenging academic environment at Lutheran South. Thanks to my school, I'm ready to not just go to college, but excel in college and throughout the rest of my life. Have you checked out Lutheran schools lately? Learn more at lhssstl.org. That's lhssstl.org.
Jesus once said, "I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep." I'm Pastor Mark Hawkinson. On the next Jubilation, I'll share faith-strengthening music, and I'll talk about how Jesus is laying down his life for you means you get to take yours up again, all the way to heaven. More on that taken up type life on the next Jubilation Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth or sync up to listen in your car while driving anywhere. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org. On the air, online, and on demand, the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Coming up this week on the Lutheran Hour, Pastor Gregory Seltz says we like to do things for ourselves, but God's Word has a different take on our do-it-yourself tendency. We'll also meet a family involved with caregiving and care receiving, and Pastor Seltz explains why we need a Savior who's fully divine and fully human. That's all this week on the Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are talking with missionary kids this week. Our next guest is, he's a missionary kid all grown up, the Reverend Edward Frederick Lutz. And Deaconess Grace Rao, Director of Deaconess Ministry for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, recently had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Pastor Lutz and to hear his story. And Pastor Lutz is now 90 years old. And we're looking forward to sharing his story with you today. This is quite a story. Born in India, and grew up much of his childhood there, and became a pastor later on in life, and served as a pastor in congregations and other missions. Hope you enjoy the conversation with Deaconess Grace Rao and the Reverend Edward Frederick Lutz, and his daughter also joins in to help with some of the facts along the way. Hope you can stick around for the whole conversation. It's a great one.
Reverend Edward Lutz, it is good to see you. Tell us about your childhood in India. For example, school, vacation, holiday, friends.
Oh my goodness. This will take an hour and a half. I was born in Nayur, India, South India. That's in the Travancore area. And the war was threatening in Burma. The Japanese at that time were threatening to invade India. I guess the way history turned out, that was reversed. It wasn't the Japanese, it was the Germans that were in control. And it was an entirely different ballgame. But anyhow, I was born in Nayur, N-E-Y-Y-O-O-R, South India, near Travancore, near Trivandrum, if that rings a bell.
I know the places. Okay. The next one.
You want my whole history of childhood?
I would love to, but the time speaks. Yeah, how about your school?
My schooling?
Mm-hmm.
My early schooling was up in the hills at Kodaikanal.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I don't know what they call that school now.
International school.
International?
Mm-hmm.
You know more about that than I do. That's right, okay. I went to the international school in Kodaikanal.
So you spent many months away from your parents in order to go to school?
You studied from kindergarten to...
I studied in India at Kodaikanal for 1.5 years only.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get any certificate, high school certificate. I couldn't tell you that I graduated from a high school, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was over in this country when the Japanese led up over on the one side and the Germans took over.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a whole new ball game, and Dad took it that way. He arranged us on a ship to get out while there was still time. And in the process, that time disappeared, and we were at war, and my big problem then was, would I keep coming over here, or should I stop and spend my time over in India as a missionary, or as someone who assists a missionary to get the word to people who would have it in no other way. So that's about where I'm at.
So do you remember anything about taking vacation or holidays in India? Did your family go anywhere?
With your family, with your parents? Later on?
No. So during your time?
We never went. We did take one trip, but it was not with a family idea.
Okay.
It was a retirement thing.
All right.
I had already retired from the ministry, and we took a trip back to India to see the haunts where I grew up. And did we see haunts?
What do you remember about your father's ministry in India?
About his ministry? Oh, my goodness. My father had charge of about 7 villages. And one Christmas, he wanted to have every village to hear the word of God from his mouth. And so he arranged a trip whereby we left the missionary bungalow at a certain time, and we had it all scheduled. Every hour and a half, we stopped at a village, and we had a little service for Christmas. And then we went on to another village and had Christmas. And we had Christmas all night long. That was the most wonderful night I think I ever lived. There was Dad speaking the word, what he loved to do. And all I was just an adjunct, a sidekick who might be of help along the way, that's all.
And your brothers and sisters were with you?
Brothers and sisters, they were all over here in this country.
So just you and your Don youngest brother, Don?
Were over in India.
Okay.
Walt and Mill went back with us after a furlough. Mm. But in a year or two, they came back to America.
Okay.
With other missionaries. Mm-hmm. And we were left with just the four of us.
When did your family leave India?
When did they leave India?
Mm-hmm.
My brother Don was 11.
You were 16.
16?
Mm-hmm. You were 16 and Don was 14.
It was 16. Okay, I apologize. Anyhow, that's fine.
So you returned back to U.S. with your parents?
Not with the parents.
No. Mm-mm.
No, we didn't begin with the parents.
Okay. All right.
We ended up in India with four people.
Okay.
Dad, Mom, my younger brother, and myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Dad was anxious to get us out of danger.
Mm-hmm.
So he
sent you back.
Booked travel on a ship that took us away from Bombay and out into the Bay of Bengal, way out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there they transferred power from the British to the Germans. That was a transfer I didn't know anything about until the war was over. Isn't that strange?
So did you come with adults? Did you have adults watching over you when you moved to the United States?
When we moved to the United States, there were no adults watching us.
Mm-hmm.
There were just the three boys,
mm-hmm.
my brother Don,
mm-hmm.
and George Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Schrader rings a bell for you.
So you were 16, George was 15, and Don was 14.
Oh, that makes sense.
And the three of you came together.
Yeah. We three boys formed a little entourage on this one ship, President Madison.
President Madison. How long did it take for you to travel? How many days were you on the ship?
To get to America, how long did it take?
It took us 52 days to go halfway around the world.
So when did your parents return to the United States?
They returned to the United States some 40 years later, after Dad had completed his agreed term of office over there in India. And he went to Idaho, because his relatives from Nebraska had moved to Idaho.
Uh-huh.
And so right away, we all tried to make arrangements to get to Idaho quick. Get to Idaho. So we tried, but it didn't work.
Mm.
There were too many other problems that broke in. And so life went on.
So when did you get back to India to have a after? When did you return since you arrived here?
I seem to recall, this is only by memory, this is, we were on this ship for 52 days, I know that, and 52, that's a long time. But how much of that was actually spent on the ship and the other in getting there or getting away from there was part of the program that God alone put me through.
When you arrived in the United States, did someone meet you? Was someone waiting for you?
When we arrived in the United States, we were a party of three dumb kids. We didn't know A from Z. We landed there as strange children, three boys. Nobody claimed them. And there we stood, waiting for something to happen. And all of a sudden it did. Our church came to our rescue. They sent out a squad or something and found us on the beach or on the turf or on the
shores,
whatever you call shore.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are.
So, did you go back to India after that?
Yes.
What year?
What year? If I could name the year, I would be glad.
Never mind. But you went back.
We went.
With your wife.
And yet, no. It was I myself first.
Okay.
And then my wife.
Okay.
Because our church did not allow missionaries at that time to be married.
I see.
So we had to wait. And when Mom came, then Dad and Mom got married out there.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
Okay.
It's a story that within a story.
Mm-hmm. And you have an older brother who became a missionary in India.
I have an, not brother.
Uncle Arnold.
Yeah, Arnold is my brother,
mm-hmm.
but the missionary is his son, the brother's son.
What did you gain or learn from your life in a missionary family that has served you well and helped you in serving others? What did you gain or learn from a life of a missionary's family?
What have I gained?
What did you, or what did you learn?
To let God be God, and He makes the decisions.
Wonderful.
Not Ed Lutz.
Mm-hmm.
After all, Ed is just a sidekick.
Many things were out of your control.
Out of my control.
So how did your experiences as a missionary son help you in serving others?
How has it helped me?
Yeah, as a missionary son, helped you to serve others here in the United States.
In the United States.
As a pastor to your congregation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. That's a huge question. But we'll attack to begin.
Mm-hmm.
And where we end up, God only knows. I was born in Neyor, South India, Neyyor, which is not very far from Kerala, from Travancore, South India. During my stay over there, my older brother and sister, Mildred and Walter, came to the States with other missionaries. So there were only four of us left. And we four tried to forge some kind of a pattern or program whereby the word could get out. Not what we say, but what God says. And in that process, I began a whole new life. My life then centered around God and not around Ed Lutz. He was just a little sidekick. God is the one who was in control, and he did wonderful things.
What did you learn from your dad that helped you when you were a pastor?
When I was a pastor?
Mm-hmm. What did you learn from your dad?
Compassion.
Mm.
I would say that was the biggest thing that Dad taught me.
Mm.
Compassion. Mm-hmm. Remember, they too have souls.
Mm-hmm.
And they too need to be prayed for.
Mm-hmm.
They too need to be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his whole thrust.
Mm.
And that's the thing that I think influenced me most.
Mm.
Right.
What advice do you have for parents considering life and service as missionaries?
Mm.
What advice would you give for the new missionaries coming or the parents?
Mm. Right, right.
Mm.
My advice is, first, God. Second, whoever you're trying to serve. Third, you yourself, out in the wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the story of my ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So for how many years did you serve as a pastor here?
In this country?
Mm-hmm. You were here in St. Paul for 25.
I was here most of it.
Yeah. And in Belleville?
Belleville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in total, how many years? Like it should be more than 40 years or 40
everything?
Years?
Everything?
Yeah, everything together.
Together?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it would be at least 40 years.
Mm-hmm. I remember celebrating your 50-year ordination.
Do you remember
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm. So it should be
so at least 50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good guess.
Yeah.
40 or 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you went to the St. Louis Seminary at the time?
Yeah.
Well, in the early years,
yeah.
Yes. My first year is over in this country. When I say this country, I mean the United States of America. My earliest experience that I can recall is when I was left stranded on the side of a boat, and the boat was just getting ready to sail.
Mm-hmm.
And we even got settled on the boat less than 2 hours. It did sail. And it got out on the high seas. And there, I guess, some transition took place. Transition of power or authority. And things shifted. They went to the company and not to the United States of America as a country. So that created problems. Then Walton Mill came home with other missionaries and got out of trouble. And that left Don and Ed and George Schrader and we three boys. We got lost on the water. Everybody wondered where we were. Only God knew. And here we are. God has preserved us, and he's lengthened our life. He's made us something that can be a blessing to others. And so all praise and thanks to him.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.